everyone. I'm Brandon Odo.
And I'm Brian Bowling.
And this is Critical Care Scenarios, the podcast where we use clinical cases, narrative storytelling, and expert guests to unpack how critical care is practiced in the real world. Hey, all, it's Brandon, and back with another Turbo. I want to talk today about a concept that applies to learning as a clinician, maybe especially to people in kind of a journeyman phase of their career, meaning they're past their initial training, but not yet quote-unquote experts. But really, I think it applies all the time. And honestly, the more you continue to use this attitude, the more you can continue to grow and not kind of settle out. The idea here is that there's kind of a sweet spot for how familiar and comfortable you are with certain things, where it is reasonable for you to learn more about them by experimentation. What do I mean by this? So once you are trained, let's say you have your initial clinical training, whatever that looks like, you are hired on the job, you have a structured training program like residency or fellowship, but your initial training, everyone needs this. An APP like myself, more so than someone like a physician who goes through a more formal training program, but we all have to learn. And so we all have to do our initial learning. That's great. That is usually more structured in that there is a kind of a specific framework you're learning within. And really what that means is you're learning to do things the way that the people teaching you do things. They're saying, you know, here's placing a central line. Here's how I do it like I did. Great. You have to learn some way, and that's how you start out. But I'm going to use a lot of procedural examples because it's kind of a structured example of these things, but it really applies to anything. Even, you know, clinical situations, decision-making, certain diseases, certain emergencies, anything. So the question is, what happens after you leave that initial, more structured training framework and you, quote, go out on your own? In other words, your job now is just to do your job, to, you know, practice medicine within this structure. What does the rest of your career look like now? And there is always the possibility that the rest of your career looks exactly the same. The arc, the trajectory of your growth and learning and change as a clinician has now flattened out, and you will now do exactly the same things, have exactly the same knowledge base and the same practice pattern that you developed in your training forever. And that's probably not what you want. I mean, that's up to you. It's not what I want, and I think not what a lot of people want, especially if where you're at after initial training is still pretty limited. And that's may indeed be the case depending on how robust your training is. So if you want to develop it further and continue to grow, you probably need to make an effort to make that happen. Now, you can hope and expect to learn on the job from those around you. Hopefully, you work with great people who are smart and you can learn from. And the more, I guess I could say, academic or teaching the environment, the more likely that is. But it's still kind of on you. You know, even if you're surrounded by good ideas and knowledge, if you never apply it to your own practice, you'll never grow. So there is kind of a zone here, a sweet spot between the things that are very comfortable and familiar to you that you are already an expert in. They're less familiar than that, but they're not so alien and strange and unknown to you that it would be crazy for you to apply them. There is a certain no man's land, kind of a margin here, where you can try to push the periphery and grow the bounds of your practice by doing things that you sort of understand, but you haven't yet done much. And you could imagine why this is kind of a small space, because if you go too far out, you're a cowboy. You're doing stuff that you don't understand. It just occurs to you, or you read about it once, or you heard about it. So you're like, we'll give it a shot. And you don't know what you're doing. You don't understand how to truly do those things, certainly not to do them safely and really apply them. And so you are at risk of harming people, and you will certainly be perceived and develop a reputation as some crazy cowboy, which is not good for anybody. And certainly for someone like myself, like a PA or an NP, where really our practice is fundamentally collaborative. We are always working with others. And in a way, everything we do is not just our decision, but can be seen as kind of the act of the physicians that we're working with. And you don't want these people to perceive you as a cowboy, because that's kind of on them. And the extent to which you can do anything, and certainly the extent to which you can try new things, depends on that trust. So you need to maintain that trust. And yet, if you go the other way and you stay too close to your level of comfort, then of course you cannot grow. You will only do the things that you've always done and been good at, and you never do anything else, unless it is kind of spoon-fed to you. So someone who is an expert at something explicitly teaches you something and then, you know, assists you, kind of holds your hand through it until you've done it enough that you are very comfortable with it and so on. That's great. But I'll tell you, that doesn't happen that much once you're out of explicit training formats. Once you're out in the world, you'd be real lucky for that to happen much, if ever. So there's a space here where you can experiment responsibly. There's a concept in pedagogy, I think, called the zone of proximal development, which is very similar. I think the zone of proximal development is meant to be a space where you can learn kind of under supervision and with assistance. And I don't necessarily think that's what applies here, although that can be part of it. But there is a potential role for learning on your own by kind of experimenting, if that's the word, independently. But you can imagine how the requirements for doing that safely would be even more strict. But I think you do have to do it, because, you know, waiting for the hand-holding moment may mean that you're waiting forever. Here's an example. You know, I trained initially in a residency slash fellowship program in critical care, a one-year training program, which was great training, but it was in a very structured format and institution where, you know, you're learning to do things a certain way under pretty close supervision. A great way to do initial learning. And yet, if you want to learn things that are kind of outside of that, you may kind of be out of luck. There's not a lot of room for learning your own practice patterns and, quote, experimenting. Experimenting sounds irresponsible, but I hope you're starting to see that it can be responsible or irresponsible. One of the things that I was interested in when I was learning was placing subclavian central lines. And while we did procedures, there was a finite number in our program, and I didn't get to do a lot of subclavians because I just didn't happen to work with a lot of people who did a lot of subclavians. So while I kind of knew of them and I was interested in them, and I did do, I think, a couple, that wasn't really part of my practice. But I got out of there. I went off to my first job, which was a much less structured environment. There was much less supervision. You can imagine that could be good or bad. But with the appropriate amount of foundational training and the right knowledge, it was a space where I could experiment with things. And that was a space where I started to do more subclavians. And I just kind of, quote, experimenting with that and applying it more and more. And I did a bunch of them, and eventually it became, you know, one of my favorite lines, and I did a million of them. But you could see how that could have gone either way. I could have either never done that experimenting, and then I would not be doing subclavians, or I could have done it irresponsibly and done it unsafely, caused complications, and then people will start going, what are you doing? And then it would have not only put a stop to that, but maybe put a stop to a lot of things for me. So how do you find this space and then go about this correctly? Well, I think you need to start by preparing for, you know, pushing your boundaries as much as you possibly can before it ever comes time to apply that knowledge. What do I mean? Before the day that ever comes that you're going to do a subclavian, you should know so much about subclavians. You should have read everything that you can about this procedure, how to do it, the techniques, different techniques and approaches, pros and cons, different ones, different perspectives on it, because there are always disagreements. Watched videos, perhaps, if you can, see people do them or talk to people who do them, and understand all the facets that you possibly can, including the risks, the potential pitfalls, and what you would do in those cases. When should you not do this thing at all? What are you going to do if something goes wrong? We've talked in the past about mental simulation, and this is a great opportunity for that. Before you ever do your subclavian, you've done it in your head. You've seen it, you know about it, you know the considerations, and now you've walked through it cognitively in your mental space a million times and in different iterations and variations. Things going wrong, different sorts of patients, and so on. You become, didactically speaking, a master about this before you ever saw a patient to apply it. When you do it this way, the actual experience of doing it is almost pro forma. It's the tip of the iceberg. It's your chance to demonstrate knowledge you already had. And when you do it this way, it's pretty safe. And it is pretty straightforward to take that step of actually doing the thing. And of course, there will always be learning by doing, but what you really want to see is that when you do it, it's boring. It's going through the motions of something that you know quite well. There should be no surprises, or very few surprises, or at least the surprises are just sort of subjective things, like what it was like for you. What it felt like. Like, oh, I was surprised at how deep the vessel was. Standing on that side of the bed was funny. Many people who do their first cricothyrotomy said the procedure was easy. The only hard part was making the decision to do it. But, you know, gosh, there was a lot of blood. Maybe I kind of knew it would be like that, but just the experience of that still kind of took me back a little bit. That's what you want. You don't want surprises in the actual doing of it. Even if there's a complication or some unexpected event, it should be within the space of things that you know about. You're like, oh, I knew that was something that can happen. And I have a plan. I know what to do if it does. When things happen that you don't expect and you don't know anything about it, that's how you know you ventured too far out. You're in a space that you don't understand. You have no map for that territory. And now the only thing you can do is stumble, wander around. Of course, there will always be, you know, psychomotor, hands-on skills to learn in something. But honestly, the more of that there is, that you're not able to learn or practice in some other way. So, for example, for the subclavian line, most of the hands-on skill is, you know, tracking a needle with an ultrasound, if that's the technique you're using. And you can learn that by doing other lines, peripheral IVs and so on. And I think you must. You can't just venture into this if you haven't mastered that. But the more unique skill there is to something that requires like hands-on practice, the less this is something I think you can learn in this way. You kind of need, you know, direct, supervised, hands-on learning. Of course, the surgeons do a great deal of this. You can only learn so much surgery from like a textbook. You have to just do a lot of it. That's why it requires a long training pathway with a lot of supervision. But I think a lot of people get this wrong because they expect the learning to happen purely by doing and just by like immersion and exposure. And then they're surprised and disappointed when there's not enough exposure to do that learning. And you can see how there be a few levels to that. First of all, there's often just not enough volume of anything to learn it purely by exposure. There's only so many lines, and you can imagine for even less common things like rare procedures or rare situations, if you're waiting for your first cricothyrotomy or your first tracheo-innominate fistula to learn about that thing, it's going to be too rare. You'll wait and wait, you'll finally see one, and then you'll learn like a couple things from the actual experience, and then you're going to wait and wait until it happens again. Not only is that not enough volume, but it's a disservice to those patients who you're having to learn upon. You should have already done the learning. Plus, it's just a very inefficient way to learn because you can only learn certain things by doing. For example, you know, those pitfalls and risks and things. You're only going to see those if they happen. You want to know about them, so if they happen, you're prepared for them, but you don't have to like discover them, invent them on your own. You know, use the knowledge of people who did it before, and they wrote it down. Read that book, and then go do the thing. Otherwise, it's like, you know, learning your way around a city by wandering in circles and drawing a map. Maps exist, dude. Read the map, and then go find the place. Ultimately, what I'm saying is don't waste learning opportunities. And this is so much more important if you're trying to actively drive your learning in a certain direction in an efficient way. The more you want to push boundaries and grow your knowledge base in that core of mastery, the more you have to use these tools. You know, pre-learning and making the actual experience just the tip of the iceberg. If you do that, then even relatively, you know, high acuity, low occurrence events can be enough to grow your experience. Because like when it finally happens, you already knew. And now it's just, you have the comfort of knowing it is what you expected. And when it happens again, you know, twice is like, wow, gravy, you're an absolute master, that kind of thing. Whereas if you didn't know anything about it, once or twice would be nothing. You should walk into the room when these things are happening and have a framework for it. Know a lot about it. You say, oh, I've read about this. I know all about the how to think about it. I know the approaches. I know the controversies. So I'm going to apply this, you know, to the patient in front of me. And, you know, you kind of look like an expert. But it's an expert not because you waited for this moment to learn about it, because you learned in preparation for this moment. And now you can be useful and learn something and be that much closer to this being something that is in your wheelhouse than if this was your first moment even hearing about all this. That's what I think. And I think this is all the more important, again, for those who are not learning in as structured of a situation, which applies to many of us when we get our initial training. And again, for somebody like an APP, so much more important because there isn't as much structured training. You go to school. Many people don't do any kind of postgraduate training, and so it's very easy to get some on-the-job training and then never learn anything ever again. Do the same job for 20 years and then retire. If that's not what you want, you need to self-drive your learning from your own motivation, and this is the correct way to do it that allows you to keep growing your area of competence and strength in a way that's efficient and yet also safe, and people don't look at you askance because you're doing crazy stuff, but you are doing new things and learning. That's what I think, guys. Tell me what you think. I'd be curious how some of this applies or does not to different environments and people who have trained in different settings, in different pathways. This is all true and relevant for me and my experiences, but maybe you have a different approach. Maybe you disagree completely. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. I'll talk to you next time.